Welcome to the One Wyoming podcast. I'm Ryan Thorburn, your host, and it is great to start this new venture. If you haven't heard, I'm the new Pokes Insider. I'll be covering all of the teams, all of the goings-on in the athletic department, and I could not be more excited about it. Follow me on X at @by_RyanThorburn. Follow all of the articles, podcasts, and videos at gowyo.com on the Pokes Insider page. Of course, we're going to have Kevin McKinney as our inaugural guest on this podcast. Kevin, thanks for joining. Welcome to the One Wyoming podcast.
You know, happy to be on with you, Ryan, and I just can't tell you how good it is to have you with the athletics department. We have a great deal of respect for you through all the years of you working together with you, really, for all these years, but great deal of respect of what you bring professionally and knowledge-wise. And I think the cowboy world is going to get a lot of interesting information that maybe they weren't getting prior to you to your arrival. And it's going to be a really positive thing for not only our fans, but the athletics department, the kids, the coaches. And I think it'll be a good thing for you as well. I think you're going to have a lot of fun with this.
Well, I wanted you to have you on for two reasons. One, for your institutional knowledge, and two, I think this first one, we should just kind of explain what's going on with this whole endeavor. You know, I worked in newspapers, daily newspapers, since my first stint at the Casper Star Tribune in 1996. As we all know, journalism, media, it's all changing. It's been changing for, you know, since the internet really got going. And, you know, what I love about this is, you know, you graduated from Wyoming in journalism. I graduated from Wyoming in journalism, and now it's all changing, and we're just kind of take the gowyo.com to a different level and connect all of the athletes, coaches, teams directly to fans. And let's go down memory lane, because I know, you know, I'm too young to have known Bill Young, but would you consider him the grandfather of kind of this sports information side at Wyoming?
I would. Wiles Halleck was the first, so to speak, SID that the university had, but it wasn't what it was when Bill got going. Bill, of course, was nationally known at the time. It was College Sports Information Directors of America, so COSIDA. He was one of its first presidents, and he was just one of the groundbreaking members of a very small fraternity back then. And I was fortunate enough to be his student assistant, and so I had an opportunity to go to the conventions and meet some of the iconic SIDs, as they were called back in the day, and learn what their responsibilities were, because I'm not sure they really knew what they were. They were all groundbreaking and trying to figure things out. And of course, there was no women athletic endeavors at all. It was just men. So Wyoming had maybe six sports to cover. So that's what they concentrated on. And obviously, it blossomed into an entirely different situation. COSIDA is not even COSIDA anymore. That has a new name. And media relations is what that area is nowadays. And, of course, we have all the flourishing women athletics and so many more sports. But it was a great experience to kind of be on the ground floor and watch how it grew. It's totally changed now. And, you know, change sometimes is difficult, but it has to happen. And it's almost always for the best. And what you're doing and what is happening now in the business of information dissemination is remarkable because of the internet. And so people have an insatiable appetite for it. They want as much as they can get. Back in the day, we'd send a release out on Wednesday in the mail, and that was the extent of information. Of course, now it's instantaneous, and people expect that. They want that. They want to know more, and that's what you guys are going to give them, and they're going to eat that up.
Of course, you started out in newspapers as well, in Cheyenne, and You know, I imagine back in the day, I mean, newspapers were king. That's why I was drawn to them, you know, even in the 90s. Was probably the peak of newspapers. You mentioned you mailed out the press releases. I assume mostly it was newspaper men covering Wyoming athletics back then.
Yeah, you know, we had a mailing list of newspapers. Primarily, they were weeklies because there's only half a dozen dailies. And the major radio stations in the state, I say major, I don't think we even sent it to all of the stations in Wyoming. But, you know, we'd type up the release. We had an office manager who would type up our stuff on a stencil. We'd run them off, fold them in a folding machine, and we'd mail them out on Monday afternoon and get it to the post office by 5 so that everybody could get it by Wednesday or Thursday. And that's just the way we did things. You know, we didn't know any differently. And so, but it was, you know, what happened in those days, and everybody did it the same way. You know, as I say, there were only a few sports to cover to begin with. I had wrestling and baseball. That was my responsibility. But, you know, we did a little folder for a media guide, and it was just the infancy of the business. I'm glad to have been there and watched that, because I had started in newspapers too. And I had, when I graduated, I was either going to go to the Wyoming Eagle in Cheyenne or media relations, sports information. And I had a heck of a decision to make, Ryan. You've kind of made it now after all these years, but I thought I was going to the Eagle. And, you know, I really thought about it, and I go, you know, maybe I want to get into what I'd been doing for 4 years here at the university and see where that would take me. If it didn't work very well, I'd try to go back to newspapers, you know. But I did take the media relations route, and I'm very happy I did. It's been a phenomenal experience. But And had no idea that newspapers and that, you know, that fourth estate might be struggling after a period of time, which it is. But, you know, it was a good move to make, and I'm happy I did it. I felt bad about turning the Eagle down, believe me, at the time. I'm from Cheyenne, and it was kind of a goal to start there. But anyway, I took that route, and here I am after all those years.
Yeah, I tell my kids all the time, I mean, would I like to be 22 again? Of course. But I was born at the perfect time, my generation, Generation X, because when we were growing up, there was no cell phones. The Casper Star Tribune was thriving, so I read the sports page every morning. Sports Illustrated would come once a week, and I could read all of my heroes writing. So, you know, I made the decision early on in high school that, you know, I'm not going to be a Logan Wilson type linebacker out of Natrona, so I'm going to write about it. I even worked at the high school newspaper, the Gusher at Natrona High. So I knew what I wanted to do, and, you know, breaking into the Star Tribune in the 90s was incredible. Ron Goldberg gave me my shot. And back then, I mean, I think we were all lucky. I went on to work at the Boulder Camera for 15 years, and then went out to Oregon. They have a great SID staff, but the Front Range SIDs were legendary. Yourself, Tim Harkins, Gary Ozello, Dave Platty at CU, Gary, of course, at CSU. The relationship between the media and sports information was so important to, you know, you guys would help us, you know, obviously with information, but also setting up interviews and then covering the games and so forth. I mean, we were lucky to be able to do that, and it's all changing now, as we'll get into.
Yeah, you know, I think that is really the one downside of what's happening these days in the world of media. The relationships that we had back then, and you mentioned some of my very best friends, we were so close, but we had to talk to each other. We had to get on the phone and share rosters and information for the games. And then when game day came, all the media guys we knew exceptionally well because we talked to them all week long, and maybe we didn't see them until Saturday, but we did visit with them three or four times. Bob Hammond, I talked to every day at the Laramie Boomerang, for instance. Ron, the same. And that's, I think, probably the one thing that is missing a little bit these days is the relationship. I don't know that the writers and electronic folks know each other like they did. I mean, we used to have the Sky Riders where media would come to each location and visit with – this was for football. The coaches would come in the evening and play cards with the writers and the electronic folks. And that would never happen now. We know that, and which is too bad, really. But I think there was a great deal of trust back in the day, and that's gone away a little bit, which is sad. But I think the relationships and knowing each other as well as we did. Did I like Colorado State then? No. But I loved Gary. Still do to this day, and we're very close friends. He roots against the Cowboys. I root against the Rams. But, you know, I respect him and what he did. I respected Bruce Woodbury at Utah and go on down the list. We just had a great deal of respect for one another and for what our jobs were. We commiserated with each other many times, dealing with you guys. But, you know, we had a bond, and I think those are probably going away.
Yeah, I was lucky enough to work for Dan Creedon, the sports editor at the Boulder Camera, and I mentioned that in my introductory column, which you can find on the Pokes Insider page. But, you know, Neil Welk was a great, great columnist for the Boulder Camera for years, and you know, now he's at CUBuffs.com. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. He used to shred the administration at CU, and now he's joined them, which kind of probably put that in my brain at some point during all these changes. But I remember Neil, I mean, I was in college in the early 90s, and the Boulder Camera, Boulder, Colorado, used to cover Wyoming home football games, mm-hmm. and they would send Neil or whoever, and Neil had a funny story about a Wyoming San Diego State game. This is during the WAC offensive, you know, fireworks era. And I can't remember what the score was, 63-60 or something. I believe Wyoming ended up winning that game. And Neil called Dan and said, "Hey, I'm going to need 20 inches on this Wyoming game. It's the craziest game I've ever seen." Yeah. And Creedon said, "See, you just beat Missouri on 5 downs and hung up on him." So I don't think Wyoming got a lot of coverage in that day. But back then, the metros in Denver and all these papers would come here.
Yeah, you know, I and most of them, Barney came to Wyoming more than Barney Neil Hutchinson. Did, but Barney Hutchinson. But Denver Post and Rocky Mountain News were there every game. Sometimes Woody Page would come on special games like CSU or a big game and do a column from there, which was always a good thing for the athletics department. And, you know, back in that day, our responsibility as sports information people were to get the name out there and the word out there as much as we could. And so if a national media member came, it was a huge deal. It wasn't television. None of the games were televised, but it was writers. Sports Illustrated would come. They did a piece on Fred Akers, his second year when the Cowboys really had a big year. And John Underwood came. And it was the biggest thrill I think I'd ever had. I mean, I can't tell you what that meant. But, you know, it was such a different world then. There were inches for Wyoming in the newspapers. And the Boulder Camera was one of the most respected smaller sized newspapers in the country. And you know, those kind of things were big to us. To have the Post and the News here, Boulder every once in a while, and a national deal was like having you know, ESPN do a big game here, or CBS or somebody television-wise. So it was a different world in that regard, but it was still the same idea. Get Wyoming out there as much as you can, and if it can go nationally, that's even better. And, you know, we had that happen every once in a while, and it was always a thrill for the SID to have that happen.
Yeah, I started covering the Denver Broncos for the Boulder Camera after I left the Star Tribune the first time. And my first, like, 7 years of the Boulder Camera, we were covering the Rockies home and road every game. We're covering the Broncos, obviously. I did the Stanley Cup with the Avalanche home and road, Nuggets playoffs home and road. It was this little paper in Boulder. I guess it wasn't tiny, but it was doing the same thing as the Rocky Mountain News and the Denver Post. And that gets me to, I think it all changed about 2007, 2008. You know, these horrible companies started buying newspapers. They folded the Rocky Mountain News. We became a part of the Denver Post. So these three rival newspapers were now down to two and on the same team, basically. So at that point, they said, okay, everything is local now. So no more Broncos for the Boulder Camera. If you want Broncos, use the Denver Post. Mm-hmm. So it got really localized, which was fine. And I get that. And I started covering CU, which was also a great experience. But I think that's when it really started to change. It got hyper local, online driven. Twitter came out shortly after. So instead of, you know, waiting for the paper every morning, you just follow the tweets from Adam Schefter or whoever. So it became online driven, and newspapers, obviously, budgets going down, covering less, just local stuff. And that gets me to, you know, as we mentioned, Neil Welk eventually going to CUBuffs.com, Mike Brohard, a great newspaper guy that covered CSU for years, is now working for the Rams, writing stories on their website. So that's kind of the trend that's been going. I told Jack Nallen, the editor of the Casper Star Tribune, we're still here to help you. You know, you're a new guy. I'm going to help him as much as possible. I know, you know, Alex with the Laramie and Cheyenne papers, we're going to help him like we always do. But this is the trend. Wyoming fans want it, and they want it in a variety of ways. And we're going to give it to them, I guess, from the inside at GoWyo.com.
Well, they're in for a great treat. And I know the Casper Star is going to miss you big time. But they've got to be happy for you that you're heading this way. You didn't mention him, but B.G. Brooks was another one that covered for many years for the Rocky Mountain News, and he took your route. It's a win-win, no doubt about it. But it's really good for the athletics departments that these guys like you are coming into the fold, so to speak, and because who knows better how to cover and who knows better how to get stories than guys who've been covering for a living for a number of years. And so it's a trend. I'm sure that it's probably happening all over the country, but especially around here, we weren't really used to that. It's great that it's happening that way. The fans and the student athletes will be the beneficiaries of what happens here.
Yeah, and speaking of that, I mean, the landscape is changing with student-athletes, obviously. Conferences are changing dramatically. I know that part of the reason why Tom Berman wanted to do this is because the more exposure these student-athletes get, the better the fans get to know them. You know, I think the hope is that Wyoming will be able to compete in the NIL space here coming up in the near future. We're going to have to. I can say we now. We're going to have to do that. OneYO.org. I mean, you have to get involved. It's just the nature of the beast right now. So that's part of it, too.
Yeah, you know, it used to be simply recruiting the best individuals you can recruit. And that's still obviously top priority. But NIL has changed that. You can attract young people without recruiting them much. They're in the portal, and if you can NIL them, you know, which isn't a word, but if you can do the NIL thing, they might come here never even seeing the place. It's a whole different world. Maybe we say it's too bad, but it is the way it is. And so you can be upset about it, you can gnash your teeth about it, but that's where it is. And, I think that when the fan base knows these individuals more, not only might they lean towards the NIL thing, but they'll probably buy more tickets and they want to see them. I think that students come to games because they know the athletes and they're in class with them or they see them at the union and so they want to come and root for them. I think the same is going to hold true with the regular fan. They see more about somebody, they know somebody, you know, a little more in depth. And they want to come and actually see them. And I think that's also a huge challenge because of television and streaming. And you can sit on your couch and watch it. But if you know them a little bit better, you may want to come and see them in person.
Yeah, and we'll get more into this with Tom in a future podcast. Mm-hmm. But, Kevin, before I get you out of here, I mean, spring football has started. We have a bunch of content already. You know, the first story I did was on Evan Svoboda because I think Creedon once told me, when in doubt, covering the Broncos, write about the quarterbacks, because there's always interest in the Broncos quarterback. I think there's a lot of interest in whoever Wyoming's quarterback is. It all starts with Evan. You can go read about him, you know, at gowyo.com. But, you know, beyond Evan, you know, a lot of these guys look like they're in tremendous shape. A lot of them have been around a long time. I think Wyoming with Jay Sauville, a first-year head coach with a lot of enthusiasm, who's 100% on board with this new endeavor and getting you to know these guys. There's a buzz right now about Wyoming football that carried over from last year's home schedule.
That's exactly right. I mean, the buzz is because the Cowboys did such a good job last year, and so many of those guys are back. Eight on defense, seven on offense. A special teams guy who's great. They are interested in the quarterback, and Evan is a special guy. I think most quarterbacks are, but he not only has the physical ability, but he's really got it. You know, you hang around him a little bit, and you understand what kind of a leader he can be for this program, and you have to be. You know, I did a little deal on Randy Welniak, his first spring as quarterback, and there were three quarterbacks vying for the position. This is after the Cowboys went to the Holiday Bowl the first year with Roach, and he'd had a shoulder injury, and he goes, you know, I really worried about whether I could even throw the ball. He tried out at receiver. He said, I even punted, but he goes, as I started feeling better health-wise, he goes, I realized that wasn't all there was to it. You have to be a leader. And, you know, you can look at yourself as a leader, but the teammates have to look at you as a leader. And he said, I was very fortunate with that. But that team, which ended up winning 10 straight games the next year, they had a lot of returnees. And they had a lot of guys on offense. They had a lot of guys on defense. But they had to have a leader. Randy was that leader, and, you know, you're just hopeful that Evan is the same, and he sure can be. There's no doubt about it. But he's got a lot of good guys around him to help that role, who are probably in their own rights good leaders.
Yeah, I think Evan is that leader. We'll see if he's a gamer like Randy on game day. If he's the leader and gamer that Randy is in Josh Allen's body, look out.
Yeah, no kidding. And he does have Josh Allen's body. There's no doubt about that. He's probably as big and gifted as Josh was when he came here. But a lot of things have to happen, and nobody knows that more than Evan. But, if things go well for him, it could be something special coming up this year.
All right, Kevin. Well, thanks for being the first guest. This is a good time to transition into our second guest, Eric Donoval, the head strength coach for Wyoming football. And he's going to get you guys even more fired up about Evan and some of the other guys who had a great offseason. So thanks for tuning in and stay tuned for Mr. Donoval. All right, welcome back to the One Wyoming podcast. Pleased to welcome in Eric Donoval, head strength coach, Wyoming football. Eric, how was your off season?
We've had a great winter, absolutely great winter. We had 7 weeks of training. We gave him spring break off. We had 1 week additional after that to kind of get him ramped back up prior to spring practice. Couldn't be happier with the physical state of our team, the emotional state of our team in terms of our standards and expectations. They've met all those and exceeded them. It's been an absolutely great winter.
Let's just get into your background quickly for those listening that might not be familiar with you. Obviously, you started out at LSU, you know, after playing at Wisconsin Whitewater. So, or Wisconsin Lacrosse, ooh, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a sin rival. Right there.
That's like me and Peter Prigge, Sheboygan North and Sheboygan South here. But no, I played at UW Lacrosse. So I did my undergrad up there. I played football for 4 years up there. I also played 2 years of arena football while I was in college, year 4 and 5 after I finished. Went straight down to the Bayou after that. And I was at LSU for about 8 years prior to coming up to the High Plains.
What's that like to have that experience, you know, playing at a small college and then seeing LSU, which obviously has a monster football program, and just dealing with athletes of those different ranges?
Yeah, it was very eye-opening, an experience that I'm extremely grateful for. Mm-hmm. I remember walking in my first day and seeing the freshman class at LSU and asking if this specific player was a defensive tackle, and he was a running back. So a little bit different type of athlete than I was, certainly, at Division III level. But just an absolute great experience. I worked for Tommy Moffitt, who I regard as a gold standard in this field. Had been at LSU for about 21 years, currently the head strength coach at Texas A&M. And just a mentor that is known to develop head strength coaches. And there was a lot of growing pains within those 8 years. But it was an absolutely great experience to be able to train those athletes, to be a part of their journey, to learn how to connect with different types of athletes from different backgrounds and different walks of life. It was an absolutely phenomenal experience and very, very blessed to be able to start at that level straight out of college.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but hasn't Leonard Fournette been up here to work out in Laramie?
He has, and we knew Leonard since he was probably in eighth grade. He was a highly recruited recruit down in Louisiana coming out of New Orleans. So Leonard was always around the facility. Me and a good friend of mine, Ben Anacchione, were very close with Leonard. So he came up here and trained back in 2018. He had a little bit of a slump his sophomore year. Felt like he needed to get back to his roots. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Tommy Moffitt, my boss, used to always say, you know, once you leave college and get to that next level, don't lose your college pump. And don't forget about the things that got you there in the first place. So Leonard felt like he needed to get back to his roots. And I thought it was a great experience for our team to be able to train around someone like that as well.
I think you got here in 2018 and were elevated to the head position in 2020. Obviously a tough year to be in strength and conditioning or in athletics, but what drew you to Wyoming and what's kept you here so far?
Yeah, you know, first and foremost, when I came up here, I saw the facilities. I heard the vision from Coach Bowl. I saw how much he valued the developmental piece in this program. You know, just to be completely transparent, you obviously don't have 4.3s walking through the door. You've got linemen that need to gain 50, 60 pounds. And I felt like I could have a strong impact on these young men's careers by coming up here and help them to develop. I saw how much the state of Wyoming loves Cowboy football. And I just saw the investment in our department and how big of a cog in that engine it was. And it was something I really wanted to be a part of. And obviously Coach Bowl, that's the final selling piece. And obviously Coach Sawbell now, big, big selling points to come up here, and I'm certainly glad I made that decision.
So the team wins 9 games last year, wins a bowl. The retention of the roster was really strong, not many guys leaving. How much does that help your job when a lot of these guys have been through it before, and can you push them even in a different way when that's the case?
Yeah, I think anytime you can retain talent on your roster in this day and age of the portal and NIL, it's almost a bigger recruiting win than getting someone out of high school to retain your players. And, you know, Shea, AB, you know, Bert, all those guys, extremely great young men that are extremely valuable to our program. So we're certainly excited to get another opportunity to work with them for another offseason. I think the biggest thing with those guys is to make sure that we don't let complacency creep in and there's no sixth-year senioritis. And those three have shown no signs of that whatsoever. They're working harder than ever. But it was very important to keep those guys. That's a big piece for us.
I know during fall camp last year, a lot of guys said the theme of the program last year was to finish. Mm-hmm. You know, they didn't finish well in November, you know, losing to Boise, heartbreaker, losing at Fresno, losing the bowl game. obviously this year or last season, they blew out two opponents in the regular season and then pulled out the Arizona Bowl. Was there a theme this year, or how do you kind of, you know, go into each offseason differently or the same?
You know, we're never going to be an outcome-driven program in terms of what we do in the offseason. We're going to be a process-driven program. We don't speak about championships, and we all know that's a goal, obviously. We don't speak about it. We don't speak about winning games. We talk about and emphasize the things that are going to put us in positions to do those things later. And that's our process. And that's a rep by rep, set by set, day by day process that has to be ingrained in our DNA. So at no point are we talking about winning three games, losing three games. We're talking about finishing, and whether that's finishing a drill, whether that's finishing your meal and approaching the body weights we need to approach, whether that's finishing a lift when you're tired with great technique, whatever it is, we're emphasizing the behavior beyond the outcome. And that's always going to be what our philosophy is going to be.
Yeah, speaking of body types, I mean, I watched Monday's practice and some of the guys I didn't recognize, and except looking at the roster, like Devin Body Jr., for example, and our intern Logan put together some of the big gains that Jay Savella has been, you know, talking about. And Body, I think 175 to 184, you know, Devon Harris, a guy who's been around from forever, 230 to 240. Who are some guys that are key players that really took it to a new level this year in your program?
Yeah, those are two right now. You know, and I think Coach Savelle has spoke to it. We put on 640 pounds across the board, which gives us a 6.1 average per athlete. Last winter, we were at 510 pounds across the board for a 5.1 average. And there's a lot of reasons for that. We've put a big emphasis on the weight room. Early in winter, we want to drive strength, lean body mass, power. We're the farthest away from competition. While there's still a running component to it and we're still accumulating quite a bit of yardage, we're preparing for three practices as opposed to six practices a week. So the emphasis on the weight room can be higher. Those guys have worked extremely hard. There's a strong correlation, obviously, with the amount that these guys are eating and their attendance in the training table. We had six total missed meals throughout 7 weeks. So you're looking at about 280 meals a day across a whole roster, three meals a day. We're talking about six total missed meals. And so to me, as a strength coach, all we can do in the weight room is break their bodies down. Okay. Like, we're not going to get strong when we squat. We're not going to get fast when we sprint. We're going to get strong when we squat. Our body adapts to it by fueling the correct way. And so seeing the behavioral and standard changes that we're starting to implement here, that's a big reason why our body weights are where they need to be when you, in conjunction with a comprehensive program.
You mentioned when you were at LSU, you thought a freshman running back was a defensive lineman. Evan Svoboda is an interesting guy for Wyoming fans. He's been around for a while. You know, he chose number 17. He has a similar background from how Josh got to Wyoming as far as being overlooked out of high school, goes to a junior college. I mean, when people see 6'5", 245 plus quarterback, that's exciting. Where has he made progress? You know, obviously he's made a lot of progress with the offense and playing football, but where has he made progress? And what's it like to have a quarterback of that stature kind of leading things in the weight room like that?
Evan has had an absolute incredible winter. I mean, you just talk about a consummate professional. From his, when he drinks his smoothies, to when he takes his vitamins, to how he lifts, to how he leads the people around him. He is a physical specimen. And everybody sees 6'5", 245, but people probably don't know the dude can run 21 miles per hour as well. And the guy's probably producing about 400 pounds of force at 10 yards. So an absolute physical specimen. And he's that way because he is a internally driven, self-motivated self-starter. The guy works his tail off every single day, and he is a physical specimen. He's strong. He doesn't look like your prototypical quarterback. He looks like a linebacker. He runs like a safety. So I couldn't be more excited for Evan to see him take the reins and see what he can do. He's done an incredible job. He's left no stone unturned in his preparation this whole winter.
Yeah. I'm sure your program is pretty consistent and stuff like that, but when you hear Jay Savelle at his opening press conference say, okay, I'm a defensive guy, but I know what's hard to stop, and what's hard to stop is when you get J. Mike in space, or, you know, Bighorn in space, or Whaley in space. And we saw that at first practice, they kind of spread them out a little bit to try to get those guys in position. What do you do to hone those guys when they are in space to have that explosiveness that Wyoming's looking for?
Yeah, we're a speed-based program. We want to prioritize speed. I like to think of it as building bullets, not bowling balls. Now, when you talk about the O-line, D-line, it's going to be a little bit different conversation. That's a very different demand on the field. When you talk about the perimeter players, and as you move farther and farther away from the line, speed is a priority. So speed is something that we train twice a week, year-round, whether it's acceleration 0 to 20, whether it's top speed 20+. That's a stimulus and a training trait. That's the holy grail of athletic performance. So we want to train speed. And then along with speed, we don't want just fast guys. We want big, fast guys. Mm-hmm. And so we calculate what's called momentum. And that's how much force they are producing at different yard markers. Okay. So we can take our offensive linemen, and if we look at their raw absolute speed, it doesn't look that good. And then we take their momentum and we realize that FIA is producing 400 pounds of force at 10 yards. That's what we want. So we want to prioritize speed. We want to train speed, not only because that's an important trait for athletics. It also plays into conditioning, what we call speed reserve. These athletes are not asked to run top speed every play of the game. So the easiest example I can give you is if we have a defensive back that can run 18 miles per hour, his operating speed play to play is about 15 to 16. Okay, so if I'm asked to run 15 to 16 and my ceiling's 18, I'm going to be pretty fatigued at the end of the game. So if I can take that defensive back and go from 18 to 21 miles per hour, that 15 to 16 is a jog in the park. So not only does speed help us athletically, speed helps us from a conditioning standpoint because we're just fresher, because it's easier for us. And then there's an injury prevention standpoint as well. There's certain bandwidths of biomechanics that we want our athletes to run in. And so we want to train all those traits year round. It's a very, very important thing for our program.
After you guys put in all this work and all this, you know, technology and each guy's individual plan, what does it feel like for you on game day when you see Harrison Whaley break it against Texas, or J. Mike take a simple route against Hawaii and take it to the house like that?
It's incredible for me. You know, it feels like when I was playing on game day, just in a different lane. And more so, I see these guys at their highest. I see these guys at their lowest. I see how hard they work. I see the adversity that they break through. I see how hard they push their bodies. I see how emotionally taxing offseason can be. It's hard. Division I football is hard. And then to see those fruits of their labors actualized on Saturdays, it's a great feeling for me for them, and I'm happy for them.
Yeah, you guys track everything. Obviously, I mentioned Whaley. You guys add Tyler King, TK King from Texas Tech, DJ Jones from North Carolina. If you had a track meet right now, who are you taking?
They're going to get mad at me. It's going to be between Harrison and TK. Both of them are 22-plus mile-per-hour guys. We actually have 8 guys that can run 22 miles per hour. Yeah, 22 miles per hour, you start getting into the 4-4 range. 23 miles per hour, you start getting towards that 4-4 low range. So it's going to be a toss up between one of those guys. Bighorn's in there. Justin Stevenson's in there. Wyatt Eckler's in there. Andrew Johnson's in there. So we got some Blazers on the team for sure.
I mean, Wyoming, you spoke to it as a developmental program. I heard a lot of buzz about the young defensive linemen last year, especially the tackles. How are they progressing, and how do you approach developing, you know, defensive linemen and offensive linemen so they're ready to go year 3 or whatever that when they get their shot?
Yeah, there's some impressive freshmen in that D-line class. You're talking about Jaden Williams, Lucas Samsula, some of those guys. I mean, I could have put all the weight in the weight room on Jaden Williams' back and he probably would have squatted it. And we cut him at about 585 and said, "That's good enough, buddy. We know you're strong." But in terms of the development of the interior linemen, very different from a perimeter player. Their game is very horizontal. There's certainly a certain amount of absolute strength that has to be involved because they have to engage another body every single play. There's no need to run those guys past about 10 to 15 yards. They play in a box, and a lot of their conditioning is done with sleds because we want to get them used to that horizontal resistance. So absolute strength is really important. And then just as important, how fast they display that strength, which we consider power. On average, from snap to engagement on the offensive and defensive line, it's about 0.45 seconds. So if we have these guys that can squat 600 pounds, but they can't display that strength in half a second, then it's not going to transfer to the field. So strength and power is absolutely important. Their acceleration through 10 yards is really, really important. And obviously their body composition is very, very important. Now, obviously they're going to be bigger guys. So we want to hone in their nutrition pretty good, and we want to get them to the appropriate body weight.
Obviously with so many returning players, you know, I know Jay and Gordy are really excited about the newcomers coming in. They had a great recruiting class. When those freshmen come in, how do you orient them? You know, a lot of them don't live at, you know, 7,220 feet. What's kind of the process to make sure they're ready for practice?
Yeah, altitude is real, and I can promise you it's real because I came from pretty much below sea level, and I could barely walk upstairs when I got here. And I'm getting older, so maybe I'm just a little bit out of shape. But altitude is real, and that's certainly a precaution we take into account. Now, when you talk about an early enrollee guy, that's a little bit more baptism by fire. When you talk about a true freshman coming in the summer, that's going to be structured a little bit differently. They'll be with just the freshmen. There'll be a slower progression. But it's a strong collaboration between sports performance and sports medicine, between how much can these guys do. You know, we have six reps of something. They may only do two. And we kind of err on the side of caution with them. Now, when you're talking about a transfer, a lot of those guys have had years of development, so they've got some pretty good raw material. Every strength and conditioning program is a little bit different around the country. Some people Olympic lift, some people box squat, some people full depth squat. And so it's communicating with those guys like TK King and DJ Jones and those kind of guys and seeing what they've done in the past and then refining their technique to fit our system.
Obviously, Jordan Bertinoli, Caden Barnett, Dwayne McNeely, a few key guys are sitting out this spring. What's your process of keeping guys like that engaged? I'm sure they're self-motivated, those three, but just to keep them engaged and on schedule to finish out strong when they get back.
Yeah, I think one of the hardest things for a competitive person and a competitive athlete like those guys are is to be on the sidelines of things or not being doing the exact same thing that the team's doing. A credit to all those guys in terms of our return to play program, they've attacked it every single day. Now they've certainly got some limitations from sports medicine in terms of what they can do and what they can't do. But those guys are grinding just as hard as anybody else. You know, they're lifting during practice while the team's practicing. They're continuing to lift on Monday, Wednesday, Friday when the team lifts as well. They're just going to have some restrictions within what sports medicine gives us, but they're working 6 days a week right now.
I mean, we've seen Fia and some other of these dudes go viral, you know, when they do certain things in the weight room. It's not often you see a head coach at the FBS level going viral. What was it like to see Jay put up 305, and how much does that kind of, you know, show off his, you know, reputation as being like a players type coach?
It's incredible. Now, it's no surprise to me. Me and Coach Savell have been very close for 4 years now. We've got a very strong alignment in our beliefs. And so Jay's been lifting with me for about 4 years now. But for him to come in and get gritty with the guys, I think it's incredible. I think it creates buy-in. And, you know, Coach Savell is labeled as a player's coach. I think he's labeled like that because he's extremely good at forming strong, authentic connections with anybody, not just the players, but with anybody. But at the same time, there's a very strong standard in this building right now. And there is a lot of alignment from the very top with Coach Savell all the way down to sports performance, sports medicine, nutrition. There is a very structured standard that is very clear and very concise that our players are adhering to. So while he may be labeled a player's coach, that's probably because he is so strong at forming those incredible relationships. He also has a very high expectation for these young men. He's got a high expectation for his staff and his strength staff, and the team is adhering to it and excelling right now.
It had to be cool for you, and I'm sure you weren't surprised, but to see Big Frank Crum, you know, at the combine, being interviewed by the NFL Network, running under a 5 second 40. I mean, what was that like watching that?
Yeah, I'm so happy for Frank. You know, I wish people could have seen what Frank was when he got here. You know, a 255-pound, 6'8 dude that could barely bench 135 for 10. And the guy just stuck to the process. He worked day in and day out, and he has earned everything that he's about to get. Now, when we watched Frank run as a freshman, he had athleticism that you're not supposed to have for 6'8". He needed to get stronger. He needed to get bigger. But he had some raw athleticism that you're not supposed to have when you're that tall. So I'm not real surprised. I thought he was going to go 5 flat. 4.94 is an incredible time for almost 6'9", 315. But Frank possesses some raw athletic ability that you cannot train. And so then you just add some strength to that, add some size to that. And Frank was always an incredible young man who worked really hard. It's just a recipe for success. And he's earned everything he's about to get.
Also, I mean, you mentioned how Wyoming doesn't automatically get the 4.3 guys or the guys, the ready-made guys. But it has to help you guys to see, you know, Josh Allen in the league, Logan Wilson, another guy who came here as a walk-on and is now a stud middle linebacker, to sell your story on how you get in this room with me and develop, and eventually your dream could come true at Wyoming.
Yeah, it's really good for our program, and it speaks volumes about what we do here. And that all starts with the coaches and recruiting the right type of guy that fits the Wyoming blueprint, both athletically and from a character standpoint. And I feel like our coaching staff does an incredible job of evaluating, pinpointing guys that are going to fit the mold that we want. And then I can't speak enough about the University of Wyoming, Tom Berman, Matt Wisnant, Coach Sauvel, and the resources that they allot us in the weight room. You know, we've got a beautiful 12,000 square foot weight room. We need the square footage to train guys appropriately. We've got 5 full-time strength coaches that are designated just to football. That's unheard of. We max the NCAA rule out with that. You can only have 5. We max that out. And so that's important to get in place so the guys get coached appropriately. And then from a resource standpoint, giving us the GPS system, giving us the elite form velocity-based tracking, giving us force plates to evaluate our players' readiness, all these things. I can't speak enough about the University of Wyoming from the top down that allows us to put in place the program that we want to.
Well, it seems like Jay is pretty happy. The practice won. The guys look good. And Eric, thanks so much for joining the One Wyoming podcast today. You made the inaugural pod, so that's a cool part of history. Hopefully we'll keep this going weekly with a lot of great guests. So thanks for tuning in, everybody. Check out all of our coverage at gowyo.com.